Blog Talk Radio.
Let's have one day, we need someday. Let's have a more.
Ni mwa mwere dada.
Ni mwa mwere ne awe. Let's have one day, we need someday. Let's have a more.
Ni mwa mwere dada.
Ni mwa mwere ne awe. Let's have one day, we need someday, yo yo yo. If you have more,
ni mwa mwere ne tata, ni mwa mwere ne.
Let's have one day, yo yo, we need someday. If you have more,
ni mwa mwere ne.
We are starting an hour late because we didn't broadcast Diaspora and Truth today with our colleague Mukuka in Australia because of some scheduling challenges. However, she's going to broadcast a show during the week. I believe it will be Wednesday, and we shall communicate that to you. Please follow us on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio and on Facebook, Zambia Block Talk Radio. Like us and you'll be able to follow everything that we are doing. Exciting day again. We have an interesting discussion on perspective, and then we'll be going to, on Business Forum, we'll be doing our districts. We'll be going to the district of Chinsali in Muchinga province. What I did this time is we just came out of an Olympic season or scenario or enjoying all those things. So I thought that maybe we should do some discussion here. Let me welcome those that have called in, and then we can proceed with our discussion. Canada, Roger, my good friend, good morning.
Good morning, Nelson.
How are you today?
It's nice and warm. It's still nice and warm. Very, very strange for this part of the world.
Yeah, it rained here last night, and
thank God.
Yes, it did rain. So we are having a little bit of a cool type of a breeze for Texas standards, and
yes.
Which is good. Mr. Bianchi, good morning.
Good morning, my friends. It's always a pleasure to hear.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to hear your voice, and I'm glad you've joined us because I would like to get your views on this discussion, which I have called Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds. That's a very good, I like that, and I've got a lot of feedback on this on Facebook. Jonah, you've been a war, you are in big trouble.
I'll accept my punishment.
You see, Roger is laughing because he knows that he's in big trouble. It's good to have you, Jonah. And I made sure I contacted Jonah about this, Roger, because I wanted to get his friends. Dr. Musanje is on his way to a funeral, I believe, in New York. Dr. Musanje, how is the trip going?
We are driving well. We are about in New York. We are about to reach New York.
Okay.
In about 30 minutes.
Excellent. Our hearts and thoughts are with you, and I know you are going to mourn, and just join us and listen into the discussion. Okay, Roger, Mr. Bianchi, Jonah, our discussion today is athletics, Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds. The reason I came up with that title, Mr. Bianchi, is for this simple reason. When I looked at, I went online, of course, Jonah, and I printed out the, what they are calling the medals count, okay? The countries, the medals they recorded, and the athletes from particular countries, what they received. Now, if you look at this thing, if you're in your house, you can simply Google London Olympics 2012, and it will bring up that information. What I did, Roger, is that I looked at the first 10 countries, the way the medals were listed. Of course, the United States got the most, all categories, silver, gold, and bronze, 104 total, followed by the People's Republic of China. Now, before even going any further, Mr. Bianchi, we can stop right there by the first two. United States and People's Republic of China. To me, that already sends a message right there. And and when you look at the following countries, Jonah, the third was Great Britain with 65, Russian Federation with 82, and then South Korea 28, Germany at 44, France and Italy. First of all, if you're one person who follows world affairs and things like that, the top eight countries, except probably for Korea, I'm not very sure, belong to the G8 group of countries. Am I right, Jonah?
Yes.
They do. So
yes.
What we are going to do this morning, before I get ahead of myself, I can already sense that I'm getting excited about this because I want to hear what Mr. Bianchi has to say about this. our discussion, the feedback that I've got from a lot of people when I posted this on Facebook is I was trying to sort of course, get some feedback from people and what was going on. So what we are doing here is we are trying to examine and say, how does the economic standing on the world market impact the athletes for the countries for which they represent and where they're coming from? It is no-brainer that it takes a lot. I don't know. This is how I want to start. I don't know whether, Jonah, you are able to give us this information. I'd ask Jonah to help me with some research. The first question, Roger, I want us to address, what does it take to host an Olympic tournament, Jonah?
Yes. Last time I checked, they don't give you I haven't seen the exact figures for everything, but it came out to about $14 billion. Yeah. For the London Olympics, it's going to be, I think the overall figures won't come out until after the Olympics because they had to make a few adjustments. So you remember the original security company they got in, they had to kind of get rid of them and bring in the military.
Yes.
So we don't know how much that added to the overall cost, but it runs in the 14 billion.
14 billion on average, okay?
Yeah.
So when we look at figures like this, it's historically what they are telling us about the Olympics is that, of course, we know the athletic competitions, okay? And what I got off the on the net, Mr. Pianki, is that these were held among representatives of various city-states of ancient Greece. That is very simple history that anybody who's interested in athletics knows. They were held in honor of Zeus, of course, one of the Greek gods. The first games were held in 776 BC in a city called Olympia. Now, every 4 years, a unit, they were held every 4 years because of a unit of measure of time, which was called Olympiad, according to historical chronologies. A unit of measuring time. So all these words, Olympics, Olympiad, and they play a role and they come into the picture of why they are called Olympics. So we are saying 14 billion jona just to host the Olympics, okay? So basically then, what are we saying, Mr. Already when you hear figures like that, Mr. Pianki, what is it telling you about where these games can be held?
Well, it's telling you that they have to be held in what we call modernity, economic powerhouses. Now, of course, now you know the next game is 2016, is supposed to be held in Rio.
Yes.
Which I think should be protested because of the racism that goes on in Rio. But you're absolutely right. They have a symbolicness to them, and there's a lot of politics involved in Olympic Games, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is a contest between superpowers. You remember Russia and the United States. Now we have China and the United States. During the 1936 Olympics, with Jesse Owens, Hitler treated Jesse Owens better than what he could have got treated here in the United States.
Or any part of the world.
Any part of the world, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of politics used in the Olympics Games and also a contest between the superpowers.
Mm. Roger, before we go to the – I actually have the Jesse Owens incident on my list of things for us to discuss, time allowing us, and the Olympics that were held in Russia, the two items that Mr. Pianki has raised. Let me throw this to you, Roger. This is the feedback, one of the pieces of information feedback I got from one of my colleagues, and this is what they wrote to me. They said, it depends on local support from relevant country, the respect that the country gives to athletics, the sponsorship, and motivation from government. I don't know. You can pick whichever one you want or come from whichever angle you want to come.
Or we can say probably all the above, right?
Yes.
I mean, the amount of money a country has to put up, if I can follow your direction, I'm sure it is. It has to do with how much the country is worth, so to say, how much money they can find. Zambia can probably can't even think of applying to the Olympic organization to even consider us. You know, most African countries can't. Only after the South Africans hosted their FIFA World Cup, that's when the Olympics said, all they need to do, the South Africans, is to apply, because those guys are the superpower in Africa. So yes, money matters, and as long as you cannot put up a show, it is another thing. But winning the golds and everything, the medals, putting them together. I've seen Canada has hosted before. The medal count hasn't really been that. That good when it came to count the medals. So whether hosting also can be can have anything to do with the medals is another thing, but hosting with amount of money a country can put up, it all go hand in hand, I'm sure.
It's true. 14 billion, Jonah, is a lot of figures. The four items that I mentioned here that I threw to Roger, Jonah, I want you to weigh in as well. The second point here that I've alluded to is the respect that the country gives to athletics. The respect that the country gives to athletics. What picture do you get from countries that are like United States and China and then shift to Zambia? Before you respond, Jonah, let me just give you this information. Let me see. I'm looking at Kenya, of the African countries. Kenya had the highest medals with 11. The point is the respect the country gives to athletics. Kenya had the highest number of medals from Africa with 11, I think followed by Ethiopia, 7. Ethiopia apparently beat South Africa, which had 6. And then Tunisia had 3, Algeria had 1, Uganda had 1, and Egypt had 2. So the respect that countries give to athletics, Jonah.
Yes, I think that's the major difference between if you look at India and China.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or let me take India and Great Britain. The difference in the wealth of these countries is not that huge. But Great Britain will produce more athletes than India. And that's because Great Britain will put a much greater deal on a diverse group of sports. Whereas India, they might only respect something like cricket. And that respect is also reciprocated in people respecting you as an athletic power. You know, and athletics is more, has always been treated as if, think of it as a rich person. You know, if you're rich and you don't have the house and the car to show for it, very few people respect you as a rich person. You know, I don't want to use the word leisure, but it's more of a show of position in the global village. So you get more respect somehow if you're able to show that your people have a certain athletic superiority to them by winning gold medal. And so that respect goes both ways. You know, you have to respect sports for you to be respected as a sports superpower.
Interesting. I like what you're saying, Jonah. Those of you that are listening to us, this is Zambia Block Talk Radio. Our discussion is simply Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds. In no way are we claiming to be experts at this, and we're just brainstorming. We're just brainstorming before we're accused of who gave you the authority and whatever. And I consulted a lot of athletics people, even somebody who competed in the athletic, just ended Olympics, Mr. Pianki. I won't name his name because for just obvious reasons. I want to respect his privacy and everything. And he gave me a lot of information about this, and that's basically what we are doing here. If you'd like to make a comment, you can go to Zambia Block Talk Radio Facebook page and post your comment here on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio. They say what you respect, you're going to give it a lot of time, and you'll make time for it. That's what they say. So when we're looking at the issue of, before we transition to something else, the respect that the country gives to athletics. So what will be some of the indicators that this country does respect athletics, Mr. Pianki?
Well, you know, you look at, for instance, United States. It developed its athletics through a scholarship program in colleges and also in sports teams before college, in your elementary and high schools. On the other hand, you have other countries like Russia, for sure. Their athletics was state-sponsored. And I think China may, I haven't followed China as closely, but I think China may also use that particular type of principle. But the athletics, you have ability here in the United States to get college scholarships on your athletic prowess and ability. It's not developed. I think it could be developed a lot better than what it is. But, bar none, you see a lot of children coming out of high school going into college based on their athletic prowess. And I think that African countries could do a thousand times better than what they presently are doing. It's just a matter of will. And the diaspora has to get involved.
Yeah, good point right there. Roger, you raised this issue when we spoke to Mr. Mpondela about starting now for 2016. But I don't want you to go back to that point, Roger. When we were growing up, I'm able to say that confidently because I know you and I are in the same age group. Bianchi has mentioned college program sponsorship, elementary or primary schools in other parts of the world, as they call it. We are looking at the issue, the respect that the country gives to athletics. How do you assess the Zambian scenario in terms of those types of programs, primary, secondary, and college level? Where is our athletics?
Well, actually, I to answer that question, maybe we go to Mr. Bianchi's answer. We as smaller countries, yes, we can even do better. Especially the diaspora has to be involved if we have to do well. That is number one. Number two, Nelson, what do these when they are giving them medals? They are singing the country's national anthem. It lifts the country up, at least for a moment. People are able to tell, oh, there is a country called Zambia. There is a country called Congo. To me, that you know, your profile goes up a little bit. Our own self-esteem, so to say. So even as we are entangled in our local politics, our own poverty situations, where are we as a nation? Where is our pride? To me, that is the biggest question. When we are sending about 7 athletes, other countries are sending 50. Where is our pride, Nathan?
Good point right there. Let me welcome 2 more people that have joined us. I'm just welcoming them. They are free. Area code 440, good morning. Okay. Last 4 digits, 1718. They are listening. Okay. Mr. Natala, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Surviving.
Don't survive.
Not sleep.
Don't survive. You need 14 billion to host the Olympics.
14 billion.
Yeah, that is basically the debt of Roger, the points that you have raised, let me throw this back to Dr. Munsanje is indicating that he would like to say something here. The points that you have raised, Doc, did you want to come in? Dr. Munsanje? Okay. The issue of, because one of the things that was raised actually here, John and Mr. Bianchi, is the issue of sponsorship, which Mr. Bianchi has referred to as in athletics scholarship programs. Okay, and you find that when you look at the track record of most of these athletes, let's look, for example, in the scenario or the case of the United States, you find that you can trace back where they are coming from in terms of support from the college program. Parents is also another issue. Let's take the story of what's the name of the young lady, Jonah? Gabby Douglas. Okay. You see, listen to the mother talk about her life. She had to send her away from home to a place, to a college, which was offering something that would help Gabby's talent and enhance her to another level. Jonah, comment on Gabby Douglas in line with what Mr. Bianchi has said about athletic programs and scholarships.
Yes, I second what Mr. Bianchi says, because if you look at all these athletic powerhouses, there's always a path for an athletically gifted person to pursue. It might be a little tough for some athletes, but there's always that path. You know, in the U.S., as you know, for instance, for baseball, you have the little leagues. You know, there's ways that kids can go where they feel, you know, part of the team. They can develop their talent. They have coaches that know what they're doing, you know, at a young age. So you start developing that talent at a very, very young age. And this is in a sport that these kids can actually earn a living from. So if you look at countries like Zambia, they're probably not going to earn a good living running. Mm-hmm. They're not going to earn a good living being a short put hurdler. So most likely you have to do short put and work a regular job or go, you know, go to school and have to study. So you find that you don't put as much time as effort and effort towards that. And what they've done in places like China, they've broken it down into districts, and within the districts they've broken it further down, and they have a government-appointed sports official in those districts. And what they do is they train teachers to recognize talent in kids starting from kindergarten, from nursery school. You have to spot talent. You have to notice the kids that maybe have big fit, big hands, long arms, kids that can run longer, you know, kids that appear to have larger lungs. You spot them early and you let the government know. And when the government knows, they'll come in, send someone in, test the kids. If they figure out that the kid actually has the anatomy to be an elite athlete when they grow up, they're shifted to a different school, which is more like a hostel where it's specifically training for sports. That's all they do. They start early. It's a little brutal. It's not as flexible as in America. But
this is the Chinese scenario you're talking about.
Yes, the Chinese scenario. The path is, for them, the way they do it is teachers are the ones that are the first line of defense. So they're the ones that have to pick out the talent. You know, as soon as they realize, they recognize the kid that has talent, they get the kid out of that school system and put them in another school system that's specifically built for athletics. And they start training at a very, very young age, extremely young age. But there's always a path for these athletes to take that, you know, that they can at least for a moment be able to just concentrate on sport and still be able to earn a living or still be able to afford to go to school. So they don't have to put as much out of pocket as, let's say, a kid from Zambia wanted to get a gold medal in swimming. He would probably have to foot 90% or even 100% of that bill.
Mm-hmm. Because, you see, one of the interesting things is that, I'm going to throw this to Bianchi, before we discuss, Roger, the issue of what makes Jamaica unique, because somebody just told me that actually Jamaica has just come on the scene at the last Olympics in 2008. We are yet to prove that and to see where that goes. This is the question I want to throw to Bianchi. Before Bianchi responds, let me say good morning to Dr. Patrick.
Good morning. Good
How
morning.
Are you, sir?
I'm wonderful. And yourself?
We are doing fine. We are doing
Excellent.
Fine. We are doing fine. Our discussion is Olympics. Are they Olympics? Are they athletic competitions or power battlegrounds for superpowers? I will get to you. Bianchi, is the endorsements or some of the financial gains that the athletes know is ahead of them a motivation, like Roger said, when they know that if they do well, they get them gold, so many golds, or they just do exceptionally well, they know that there is some money coming on the way. Is that a motivation? Would you say that?
Well, today it is. When I was coming up, it wasn't that great of a motivation. We were just expressing our God-given talents.
Yes.
And I have always been one to say that you know, black people, African people do not look at things from that particular aspect.
Absolutely.
Your children have talents that others in the world don't have, and likewise, others in the world have talents that we don't have. It was just miraculous to see that Jamaica put together a bobsled team. Where in the world did they find snow to practice with?
Yes, sir. So then the next question is, which I'm going to throw to everybody here, what makes Jamaica unique? I mean, Roger, they've just come from boom. when you look at what you call it, when they show you highlights here and there, you don't see anything extraordinary that you don't see in Zambia, in Kenya, in Ethiopia. What makes Jamaica unique, Droja?
Well, again, one of the things I just alluded to, self-esteem of a nation. Jamaica, the Nigerians, you know, when they are here in the diaspora, they make it known who they are. They are probably not afraid as a people. And therefore, I'm thinking that also translates, even as a nation, poor as they may be, they want to put their head out and say, we are here and we are going to prove something. Because someone might say, oh, it is the access to United States which makes them special. There are so many countries which are in the U.S. How come they are not doing well? So Jamaicans, in that sense, in my view, their willingness or they want to put themselves out as a nation. You can reggae music, as they say, was initiated from there. That eagerness to want to do to prove something, I think, has proved them to be right, even in sport.
Like to say, well, we are not underdogs as you may want to think or believe about
yes.
us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jonah, what makes Jamaica unique?
Well, the thing is, I think the Jamaican government realized at some point that the Jamaicans are talented in sprinting. I mean, they realized that. And as soon as they realized that, they started pumping money into that. I mean, they have programs starting from primary schools as well.
Yes.
Start early. I mean, they have a very, very great track and field facility in Kingston that the government built. And the government spends $200 million every year just to track and just to put towards a track and field event.
Mm-hmm.
So they have committed quite a bit of money towards it. I mean, they spend more on promoting on track and field. The government spends more on track and field than the Zambian government spends on education. So just put things into perspective, you know, just put things into perspective. So it'll take a lot. And for them, they prioritize and they said, you know, this is where we are strong in. This we're going to spend our money on that. You know,
yeah.
And the countries like Korea that also prioritize. I mean, if you look at Korea, they have quite a few medals, but if you look at the sports they participate in, there are actually very few sports that they participate in, and mainly Taekwondo. But in Taekwondo, you can win 12, 15 medals in Taekwondo alone because it's different weight classes, men and women, and the South Korean government just said, you know what, we're just going to put money and we're going to develop this sport in particular because we can rack up a lot of medals through this sport.
Interesting issues you bring out, Jonah. I actually, for those listening, Korea got 28 medals in total, and they were number 5 at the competitions in terms of medal counts. You are talking about motivation from government. And, Jonah, you bring out a very interesting aspect, Piyangi, which to me is like, it's looking like, okay, instead of trying to be a jack of all trades, let's just focus on a few of, you know, some of the things. Obviously, each country can say, even if you also just look at the Jamaicans, it's basically track, isn't it? Where
yes.
they gobbled the medals. I'm looking at Kenya as well. You're basically looking at track, okay?
Yes,
they are not
yes.
into so many. So does that help the idea of focusing on particular sporting disciplines and you invest in that, does that also help? Because the Zambian government has built that place. I don't know that you had a chance to go there, Roger. Olympic, what do they call it?
The Olympic facility.
They've built the Olympic facility. I don't know what is there and what facilities it is offering. So does the aspect of focusing on particular disciplines help and investing in that?
Yeah, I think if you don't have a lot of money to spend on a lot of sports, it's always good to take the little that you have and invest it in something that you're already good at to begin with.
Okay.
That's my personal view.
Roger, what do you think should be some of the things in Zambia per se we can probably focus on? Because when we had Mr. Mpondela here, he disputed the argument of when I said we have good cycling. My memory serves me good. We have good cycling teams in Zambia. We have, of course, soccer or football, whichever terminology you want to use. Nobody can argue that we are strong in that. And which is the other one that I wanted to mention. Boxing has done very well in Zambia.
Yeah.
One fails to, of course, we had one boxer there who was disqualified, whatever happened. One tends to ask themselves and say, people, we can even sort of try to develop the women's soccer team. Look at the Americans' women's soccer team. They are even building a legacy, Roger.
Well, again, I think going back to your initial question, Hassan, growing up, what were some of the sports we grew up in? Like Jonah pointed out, some of the sports, if we say we want to gymnastics and yet we have no facilities for gymnastics, we have no cultural background when it comes to gymnastics, of course we are going to fail. But there are some of the things you and I, growing up, we used to run in the bush, you know. That is probably some of the things we can go to. Those are the basics. As a nation, we have always done pretty much good in it. So running definitely is one of those things we can do. Sports like, I don't know, volleyball, beach volleyball. Do we have any beaches in Zambia? We can develop some. But I think we should go back to things we have always done. And to me, running possibly is one of them. I may not be a very big fan of boxing, but again, that is one area we can also compete in.
Mm-hmm. Jonah, you want to add on some of the things that Zambia can do? Because the other thing I want us to look at as we're tackling this thing is, what does the rest of Africa need to learn from Kenya, Ethiopia, and South Africa? What are some of the things that we can improve on? I mean, what should we focus in and invest in?
Yeah, first, just to add on to a point that Roger made when he said that you used to run in the bush, he forgot to mention that we used to run in the bush barefoot. So imagine they give you speakers. Yeah. Anyway, some of the sports I think we should concentrate on, some of the sports that we're not so far behind, is long distance running and boxing. I think with boxing, we had a very good program that the Zambian military had, and they used to send some of the boxers to Tunisia to train for a while, and that's how we'd always send athletes to the Commonwealth Games, even the Olympics. I think we've sent a boxer to at least every Olympic in the last in the last 30 or 40 years. So that's a sport that at least we have some form of legacy on, but the government hasn't really pumped in as much money and as much focus into that sport as they should, in my personal opinion. And I don't think they need to spend that much money. I think right now we're taking very little advantage of the fact that we know our global village now. We don't even have to spend that much money. But what we need to do is have programs where we at least recognize these athletes early, and if we have to, send them to schools here. That's what the Brazilians do. That's what some of the European countries do. I mean, if you look at the British long-distance runner that won, he trains in the U.S. He doesn't train in England.
Yes, and if you're following the commentary of the people that, of course, it's NBC here who cover the Olympics, they are those rights. They kept saying he trains in Oregon. He trains in Oregon. She trains in Oregon. And, you know, when I was talking to Walia, Dr. Patrick, I was saying to myself, Walia, tell me, what is in Oregon? All these athletes train in Oregon.
Well, if you look at Oregon and Colorado,
yes,
they built up I don't know the reason why, but they built up these Olympic facilities, for the Olympic training facilities. And then Oregon is known for long-distance running. So if you look at the U.S., I think maybe because it's mountainous, high, whatever. I'm not sure the reason why they chose Oregon to be the running capital of the U.S., but they've built a very, very good facility there, and there's an abundance of coaches for long-distance running. I mean, whoever thought that the U.S. would beat Kenya, would beat Ethiopia, you know, in long-distance running. And they came out second. I mean, England came out first, the U.S. came out second. And it's a true testament of their facility in Oregon. And if you look at all the Kenyan athletes, they don't train in Kenya anymore. They, none of them do. I mean, most of them train in Europe. Most of them train in the U.S.
Yes.
So, I mean, if things have changed. And it doesn't cost the Zambian government anything. I mean, if you have a high school kid that's really, really good at a sport, you can send him for free, for nothing. And he can get a scholarship to an American university where he'll have access to a nutritionist, he'll have access to a personal trainer, to a physical trainer, and he'll have access to a wealth of coaches that can further hone his skill. And a lot of countries have realized that. If you look at the Chinese swimmer, the male swimmer, he doesn't train in China either. He trains somewhere in Europe. I think is it Holland? I think he trains in Holland. And Holland also has a history of great swimmers. So we need to, I think sometimes being rich helps, but sometimes being smart with the way we do our things also helps quite a bit, because we can take advantage of these countries that have great facilities and just piggyback off of them. We don't have to do it ourselves.
The mention of the military, Jonah, did here on how they used to send quite a bit of sports people training. The fall of the CCM cannot be ignored, Nathan.
No.
When the CCM was in force in the Copper Belt, we had all these programs in our schools. Now that the CCM has gone, all these minds have come in. They cannot even take care of where they are spitting, so to say. They can't take care of even the roads. Where is their social responsibility in these towns where they are? This is one point, I think, even as a radio station, as a people of Zambia, we should begin putting these people on the spot. This is where you are making money. As they say, you put your money, I don't know, your finger,
where your money, whatever.
Mm. They need to be doing that. But again, if we bring in the issues of Lusaka, then we are going to complicate the discussion.
That's a very good point on that, Roger. I'll disagree with you a little bit. I think to expect these companies to now start pumping a lot of money into sports or into social issues is, I don't blame them entirely. I think that's something that you do when you're bringing them in. That's something you do from the beginning. You let them know. You say, these are conditions for you to come in. You can't tell a person, we're just selling you a mine, and you're only responsible for the mine and taxes, and later on down the road expecting to do something else. So I blame us for not stating
that
from the get-go.
That's very true.
So we are to blame for that. And then secondly, you have to form some kind of incentive program. There is almost no tax incentive for a company in Zambia to do any social programs. You don't get tax write-offs for sponsoring a team in Zambia, just so you know. So, I mean, if you look at the U.S., companies get huge tax incentives for social programs, you know, for donations. Those are huge. It actually costs the company less.
Where we were saying, Jonah, if we bring in Lusaka, then things will become a little bit complicated. a tax write-off means Lusaka will get less money. No, we can't do that.
We can't do that. All right, my good friend Crossfire Radio, Wait in the UK, is commenting on Skype here that there is a research about all those runners from Kenya I think they come from 1% area of the country of Kenya, something like that. I hope I said that correctly. All right. As we're getting close to winding up here, let me just inform everybody that you're listening to Zambia Broke Talk Radio. This is a roundtable discussion. We are in no means experts at what we are talking about, but we're just using the figures of the medal count and statistics that presented themselves at the just ended Olympic Games, where the United States and the People's Republic of China topped the medal count, and it shouldn't be a coincidence that those are the two major economic powers in the world today, probably even militarily if you want to go that round. And our discussion is Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds, brought to you by courtesy of Paradigm Calling Card. You can get them and get all your details and information from their websites. It's mytalkphone.com. mytalkphone.com. I'm sure thus far Dr. Patrick has now caught up with what we are talking about here. And I know, being a Zambian, he was following what was happening at the Olympics. Dr. Patrick, what does the rest of Africa need to learn from Kenya, Ethiopia, and South Africa?
Thank you. Just listening allows me to comment and piggyback on what everyone has said, and I agree with everything that's been talked about and discussed. What I would like to do is just take it from the top.
Yes.
Let me put this on the table first. There are symbols of power: the church, castles in the medieval time, banks, and the Olympics.
Mm.
All of these are symbols of power. You have to be a superpower or a mega business, a global business, in order to back a particular country or in order for that country to come on the scene. The reason why you have Jamaica coming on the scene early on was because of Jamaica being wealthy in bauxite. There is a need to invest in bauxite, and therefore there was a need to explain to people with money, that bauxite is a lucrative investment. And in order to have someone to invest in bauxite, more than one who would want to, you want to have a conglomerate of superpowers to invest in bauxite and get a benefit. You have to have those people know about Jamaica. So therefore, the best way to know about Jamaica is to put in money to market Jamaica via the Olympics. Now, if you have a person in charge of Jamaica that is anti-capitalism, then you'll find that Jamaica is not promoted that much. But now if you have a leader that is pro-capitalism, then Jamaica will be marketed to the highest. And one way to market, again, is through the Olympics. Need I say, and I won't go further on that, but need I say the famous advertisement is, "Come back to Jamaica." And everybody know what I'm speaking about when I say come back to Jamaica, because that was a return to promoting Jamaica. Before that, there was a person that wasn't in favor of the United States and more in favor of communism, but let me leave it at that. Now, quickly moving to sponsorships and marketing the Olympics, or marketing a country via the Olympics. In addition to knowing that you want investment in a particular country as one movement to promote a particular country, you have to have sponsorships. Here in the United States, none of our athletes, none of our Olympians would have made it to London if they had not been given sponsorship, if they had not been sponsored. It behooves the marketing economists or the moving business entrepreneurs to market or to put in money for a particular athlete. So when that athlete does well or appears on the Olympics, then they not only will say, well, I was sponsored by X and X. So it's a good marketing tool. And, of course, the athlete will put in a great deal of work because of their pride of their country. I'm not belittling that, and I'm promoting that, but you have to know the monies that's going behind it. And then quickly going to what makes a good Olympics, the Jamaican bobsledders that Pianki mentioned. You don't have to live in a very hot climatic zone in order to be an outstanding bobsledder. As you know, our Gabby, who was the Olympic gymnast that received a medal in overall, she didn't train in her city. She said in order to become an Olympian, a gold medalist, she had to go to the best trainer in the best locale. And that's where you come into speaking about Oregon. You go where the trainers are and you go where the best facilities are. So you can be anywhere, you can live anywhere, but you can go someplace to be a trainer. Using the basketball analogy. We have many pro players in basketball, but where did Paul Gasol play for? He plays for the Lakers, but he played in the Olympics for Spain.
Yes.
So going, the last comment is, when I say build it and they will come, first you get your trainers, then you build the facilities, and everybody will go there. So going back, closing it up, symbols of power. You have the church, you have castles, you have banks, and the Olympics. That's where the symbols of power are used, and they're a great marketing tool. So if you want Zambia to excel in the Olympics or to have face in the Olympics, you get these global corporations that want to have an access for additional monies, such as you're saying you want Zambia to be a stock marketable country, then they will start coming in and saying, well, we need to promote Zambia because this is the only way we can get more people to come in and invest in Zambia.
That's right.
Geopolitically speaking and thinking, that's how Olympics are used. And when we think globally, then we can move Zambia closer to being at the forefront of the Olympics. It has nothing to do with athletic prowess. If Zambia could win gold medals in every competition there is, it's just the sponsorship.
That's true. We have 7 minutes before we switch to business forum. We'll continue our part two discussion of Chinsali. My good friend, the host and producer of Crossfire in the UK, Mweti, your comment, whichever angle you want to come from.
very interesting topic, actually. Very, very interesting. My only take is, when we look at Zambian athletics, we were very lucky to interview Gerard Piri just after he ran here in London. And he said he receives no sponsorship, zero, absolutely zero, nothing at all from the government.
Yep.
From Zambia. And yesterday, actually, who knows, yesterday he was actually running in the Diamond League in Sweden, but it was not reported and nobody even knew anything about it. I mean,
yes.
I only saw it when he posted it on Twitter. So that's how much support we are giving our athletes.
Excellent. You see, Gerard and I have been in constant communication and is letting us know what is happening and things like that. For the sake of everybody listening, we are trying to schedule a show with Gerard and Prince and probably 3-4 other athletes who represented Zambia at the just-ended Olympics. We're just simply going to call it the Olympic Experience, okay? We want them to tell us what goes on behind the scenes, the Olympic Village, life as an athlete. You cannot tell I'm speaking at a very high speed here because I'm winding up the discussion. I want Our final conclusion, first of all, Roger, Dr. Patrick just gave us a very good topic of discussion, symbols of power.
Yes, and I liked what Dr. Patrick also said. You know, I kept thinking to myself, what do countries get out of this? It's not very, the medals they give them, I don't think they've got, they carry with them a lot of big checks, so to say. So it is the symbolic, the power of symbol. The Chinese, I was doing the medal count, I was following. The Chinese were one day up, the Americans were one day up.
Yes.
That was sending chills in Washington. There is just no way China should have more medals. Not necessarily that China will carry a big check, but the symbol of power, the symbolism, that what that will mean, means a lot to a nation. So,
it does.
Yes. Yes.
It does. Which brings us here, as we conclude, I'm going to probably let Pianki wind up this thing. You've heard the comments, the last few comments that Rogers made, Pianki, and let me read this to you, and I would like you to conclude for us. Does the economic development reflect or affect a nation's standing and performance at international competitions like the Olympics, as we just witnessed by the medals count? Before you respond, Pianki, the first top 20 countries with the highest count of medals, there is no African countries in the first top 20. Pianki, it's over to you.
Well, yeah, it makes a lot of difference. I mean, you're not going to see no four Zambians on the St. Louis Cardinals football team front line because the nutrition, there's a lot of things that plays a part of this. I foresee China surpassing America in the near future in the Olympics to come. It's just the way things are going to happen. But I'm going to say one other thing. I agree with Dr. Patrick, but you have to go out and in your particular sport, you have to go out and identify the potential that lies within children. You know, you can't put money in a three-legged horse and put him in the Kentucky Derby. You have to identify that talent. Then you sell that talent to whoever is going to provide the resources in order to perfect that talent where it can perform on a on the international scale.
Interesting. Very good discussion there. Jonah, we have 2 minutes here. The statement here is that we've basically, without saying it directly, we've concluded that this in a way is a battleground, the Olympics. So does the economic standing of a nation on the world platform reflect their performance at international competitions? Zambia can't host the Olympics with a budget of just hosting of $14 billion. Just look at the pictures where, Dr. Patrick, where Rio de Janeiro are right now with the infrastructure they are building for this thing. Jonah, England didn't need to build another stadium and call it Olympic Stadium. They've got a lot of stadiums across the country they could have used.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, economic standard does give a great advantage, But we can, you know, you can use your smarts to outsmart, you know, to also put yourself on to put yourself somewhere there.
Yes.
And all we have to do is piggyback. I mean, China is willing to give 100 scholarships to Zambians. Why don't we turn 10 of those 100 scholarships into sports scholarships? The U.S., they'll give scholarships to anyone that can perform. Why don't we piggyback off of that? You know, we can, I mean, Prince Mumba trains here, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he
does.
Has been a Texas fan there.
He came on a running scholarship here. Why don't we send them when they're even younger? Let's send them to prep schools here. Prep schools will take international students. You know, why don't we do that? We did that with Given Kalipinde. He's a college basketball player who plays for La Bola, I think, in California. He came here in high school. He was a gifted basketball player, and it took an American worker who was working in Zambia to recognize that this kid is talented, and that American one man.
Give me information about that basketball player, Jonah, because in the next few weeks I really want us to zero in on athletes or sports Zambian athletes across the world and in the diaspora. We have an athletic coach at the University of Missouri. He was part of this discussion with Mr. Mpondela. This has been Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds. Coming up in a few minutes is Business Forum. We are continuing our discussion in Chinsali with the district executive secretary there. We shall transition there whenever he's ready. He says he needs a few more minutes. Business Forum will be coming up. And then after Business Forum, we're going to have another discussion, Dr. Patrick, which we talked about here. The current government in Zambia has created how many districts, John? I've even lost count.
I have no idea.
Okay.
All I know is that there are 10 provinces.
All right. We've got a number of districts that have been created. And the issue here is that the districts can be a way the government can create jobs for people. So let's take a brief break here and we'll come back to a Business Forum. All right, you're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. This is Business Forum, and my colleague Roger is just getting ready to connect us to Chinsali District. Our district executive, city secretary there, says we just need to give him a few more minutes, and we will proceed from there. And we're just waiting for our colleague to get ready. Hi, Elizabeth. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing okay. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Sorry, I missed most of the interesting discussion. I came towards the end.
You can comment as we transition to Business Forum. What is your take on you heard these men babbling? It's good for us to have a... You know, we always want to have a lady's voice in what we are talking about.
That's true.
So what...
Oh, you wanted to...
Yeah, whatever you heard, and what would you like to comment or say on it?
You know what? You're just hitting the nail on its head with what was... I mean, I came in towards the end, but I was like, whoa, I missed such a great discussion. And it's nice that we start questioning why. The last question, for instance, that you posed, over the 21st countries that were topping the Olympics, no African country, where are we? And if you relate it to what Dr. Patrick was just saying, when he talked about the powers, he talked about the church, the Olympics, and, you know, he mentioned...
Castles and banks, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
That would be a good discussion by Elizabeth, don't you think so? Symbols of power.
It's extremely good and very important. And if we are not featuring as African nations there, then where are we? The question then is, what are we still doing? Where are we... I know we have a lot of challenges, but when are we going to even have one? When are we going to have one African country get to that 20?
So
I think it was a great discussion, and it's a pity I missed most of it.
Yeah, it's okay. At least we've gone on record, Dr. Patrick, that a lady has commented on this, lest we be accused of. You know, in this time and age, in the 21st century, Pianki, you need to have a woman's voice in what you are saying or doing.
But you know, what she said is true, and I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you the way I see it. Africa, for instance, Zambia, Nigeria in particular, maybe Ghana, you have the people that have these skills and these talents. For the best of me, I don't know why Cousin's not taking it where it should be.
You know what? You couldn't have said it better, Bianchi. I mean, at times it even just breaks your heart to look at most of the statistics here. And what I did is, where are my papers now? Oh, most of the African countries just got one medal. Tunisia 3, Uganda 1, Egypt 2. And you see, Jonah, when I look at Egypt, Egypt is basically like South Africa. You know what I'm trying to say?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Egypt can get 2 medals. What's going on there?
You know, I train baseball players. As a matter of fact, when I leave, get off this line, I'm going to work with a young 15-year-old who happens to be my grandson.
Yes.
But the thing is that you recognize it's just like a tryouts. We have tryouts, and we put together these teams. The Chicago White Sox, we had a tournament here in St. Louis where we had junior and senior, what we call RBI teams, where they range to 17 years old. And they had teams come out of 2 teams that were sponsored by the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. And the Chicago White Sox was an all-black team. And those kids played the best baseball that I've seen in a long time. Matter of fact, I had tears in my eyes watching them perform on the field. And they took it all. But it took the vision. Someone had to have a vision. Then they got to put together those elements. Then they sell those elements. And believe me, there's people out there who will support that type of movement.
Oh, yes.
I have a suggestion. And this suggestion will guarantee at least 15 gold medals for Zambia, 15 gold medals for Nigeria, 15 gold medals for Angola. And this is how it's done. In Angola,
uh-huh.
In Nigeria, you have huge mega oil companies.
Yes.
In Zambia, you have huge mega copper company. You go to these businesses and you say, we want you, and piggyback on what Bianchi said, we want you to help us identify potential Olympians, and we not only want you to help, we want you to sponsor them, build athletic stadiums or facilities to assure that they're going to get to the competitive level to at least be able to obtain gold medals.
Mm.
This is what you want to do. You're mm-hmm. going to stay, and you're profiting from our country, so we want you to assist our country to be prominent in the Olympics. And this way you'll be killing 2 birds with 1 stone. You'll be helping
mm-hmm.
the country in which you're profiting, plus you'll be promoting your own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That sounds good.
Uh-huh.
Now, before we go
comment.
Any further, before you you comment, let me just mention to everybody that we have a show on Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, called Solutions, hosted by Pastor Mwaka. She's based here in Dallas, Texas. She deals with issues to do with relationships, marriage, and all those things. This morning, she's hosting a Women of Destiny breakfast. So it's not too late. It's starting at 9 a.m. just about this time. If you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you can head to Irving and join Pastor Mwaka. She's hosting a Women of Destiny breakfast. If Elizabeth was in this area, I would have picked her. I know you were going to be there. For those in the Dallas area, if you'd like to call for further information or details how to get there, I can't give you all the information. It's 817-374-8297, 817-374-8297, or simply go to Fresh Aroma website and you'll be able to join the women there having a wonderful breakfast. The Solutions is a show on Tuesday night, 11 p.m. The Handers, good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mrs. Handa, Dr. Patrick and her husband, they just sent off their son into a marriage life. That is a great achievement right there.
Wow,
Waria, good morning.
Good morning.
Did you hear anything about our Olympics discussion?
I just called in.
Okay, you just called in. Okay, I thought maybe you were. We were, one of the things that came up, Bwalya, Pianki Bwalya lives right where that facility we've been talking about. One of the things that came up, and you and I, Bwalya, talked during the week, that you could hear the commentators during these Olympics when they were talking about the individual athletes. He trains in Oregon. She trains in Oregon. He trains in Oregon. And we were like, what's up in Oregon? Could you just tell us about the facilities there?
Okay. From what I know about the training in Oregon, a lot of this has to do with the University of Oregon,
mm-hmm.
which is in Eugene. And that is where Phil Knight actually went. And that's where he got the idea for Nike.
Yes.
And so Nike was started by Phil Knight and his coach, Bill Bowerman. And Bowerman was the track coach over at the University of Oregon when he was going to school at the time. And so based off of that is how his love for track and field has really taken off. So Phil Knight, Nike, Eugene, that area really supports athletics. And so they've invested money into high-tech facility that really targets young athletes who want to compete in different races. And so they really, a lot of the runners are distance runners, but they also have people like Ashton Eaton, who's the decathlon guy.
Yeah,
so they're really expanding out. So it's a lot of it really boils down to support and infrastructure, which is what they've done over the last, I would say probably 40 years is really how long.
There's a lot of history. Sorry to cut you short, Bwalya. There's a lot of history attached from what you've explained. Now, break it down for when you say high-tech facilities, break it down for a guy like me who was born in the 19th century.
High-tech facility with regard to distance running. So many of us know distance running. When we look at the Kenyans and the Ethiopians and Somalians, part of the reason why they're so successful is because they train at high altitude. So that helps them really with their respiratory and ability to heal. And so over here in Oregon, what they've done is they've created a high altitude training facility. And then it was controversial. It was controversial a few years ago because it was artificial. But the guy who did it he was a marathon runner and he knows what he's doing. He's like, no, I know this is going to work. It's cutting edge, but it's not illegal. It's not a performance enhancing product. We're just doing something different, you know. So that's kind of the high tech thing that they've done, and it's been working because the guy Mo Farah, who came first in the 10,000 and 5,000, he's the guy that just recently moved to Oregon and he trains in that area. And now they're showing results. All this training they've been going through here in Oregon is working.
Exactly. Yeah. What you're saying, Bwalya, one of our Zambian athletic experts sent me that information, and he did a good analysis, Jonah. Now, Jonah, you've listened to what Bwalya said. Where was I writing? There's a lot of historical background to what Bwalya has just explained here. You're talking about, did you say 40 years, Bwalya?
Oh, yes.
40
years. Over time,
So, Jonah, this is not something that you can just wake up and dream and say, I'm issuing a check of $40 million, we are hosting the Olympics. This has got a lot of history to it. 40 years.
Yes, otherwise India would have had 50 medals as well. I mean, if you look at China as well, most people think they just came out of nowhere. No, they have a history. They have a gymnastics history. They have a diving history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not something they've just done in the last three Olympics. It's been going for a long time. I mean, we're seeing bigger and bigger results because the state is spending more and more money on it. But there has to be some kind of a tradition. There has to be some kind of a culture associated to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can't build overnight. But what you can do, you can piggyback off of somebody else. You know, Mo Farah, he's British. He just said, you know, instead of us establishing... You know, the British have had a long distance history, but that's from the 1950s. So, instead of us reestablishing this long distance history, why don't I just go to a facility that has a long distance history? I mean, that's what we can do. I mean, he didn't pay anything to train there.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, they welcome these guys. They interview the coach. If anything, they want these guys to train with the American athletes so that the American athletes can be pushed further. You know, they like that competition.
Before we quickly go to Chinsali here, Roger is just about to come on, I know. I want both Dr. Patrick and Pianki to respond to this. I just mentioned that the top 20 countries that got the most medals at the Olympics, there's no African country in there. However, Dr. Patrick Pianki, however, Cuba is in the top 20. Nobody needs to explain anybody anything about Cuba. They've been ostracized politically and all those kind of things. But here they are on an international athletic platform, and they perform, Dr. Patrick.
Cuba has one individual that has been and continue to be an athlete, even a semi-pro athlete, and that's Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro used to be a semi-baseball player.
Exactly.
And from being a semi-baseball player, he was a proponent of athletics. So he promoted his boxers, and he promoted his baseball athletics in country. So the first thing is you have to have a political leader that is keenly interested in promoting the athletics of the country. If you don't have the economic wherewithal, plus Fidel Castro at that time had USSR to provide financial support, because any time the USSR had an opportunity to snub its nose or have someone else snub their nose at the U.S., it's a feather in their cap. So whenever Cuba defeated the U.S. in any type of arena, especially in boxing, Russia smiled. So those are the two things that you must always have in place in order to reach the level of gold medalism, as one would call it.
Okay. As Pianki is going to jump in here, please just bear with us. We're just having a little technical issue on our communication as Roger tries to bring in the district discussion here. Pianki, your response on Cuba.
Well, that's an excellent observation on Cuba, and he is absolutely right. It began with Castro, with his vision. Fidel has done many marvelous things, not only in sports, but also in medicine with the Cuban Medical School.
Yes,
yep, that's right.
Yeah. But you see a lot of athletes, most recent one that was allowed to stage a defect was Androlis Chapman, who signed a six-year contract with the Cincinnati Reds. One of the best pitchers ever seen come along in my lifetime. So
that's right.
People have to have vision. Zambia, wouldn't it be nice to say that the athletes go to Zambia to train for a certain category? You just have to say, this is what we're going to do, and we do it. And it can happen also in economics, in agriculture. Look at the problems the U.S. is having with its agriculture industry this year. It just recently started selling soybeans to China at the tune of like $10-11 billion. Well, hey, do we want to cut in on that market? We can. We just have to put our vision forward and move.
Well, yeah, the medal count. You see, for me, when I just look at this medal count list, it says a lot of things to me. I can bring out a lot of topics and discussion on this. The medal count list to you, what message did it send to you? What did it bring to you? For example, for me, I look at the top two countries there. It's the United States and China. Already, I can engage anybody in a three-hour discussion just about that. What did the medal count sheet say to you, Wadia, when you looked at it?
For me, the most profound thing about the medal count was seeing how many women actually won medals, especially in the United States.
Because
this was the first time that the U.S. sent more women to the Olympics, and they accounted for about 60% of gold medals won at the Olympics.
60%.
And for me, what that said was, living here and knowing what Title IX has done in this country, so you have more girls involved in sports, and so now you're seeing those benefits. Once again, you have infrastructure and programs that were not started 5 years ago. This goes back to the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're seeing those rewards being reaped.
Mm.
And like Jonah mentioned too, with China, a lot of their medals came from diving. Once again, they have a history in diving. So while we may not have seen them 10 years ago, they've been at this for a long time,
yeah.
And now they're reaping the rewards for what the foundation was laid, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Mm.
So that's for me the most profound thing. The successful countries have a foundation that they've laid a long time ago, and they're reaping the rewards.
Yeah,
Dr. Patrick, you see why I said we needed a lady's voice on this?
That's for sure.
You
that's
see the
sure.
angle from which she has come from? I didn't even know what she just said here. Because
being that we're talking about having the benefit of the lady's voice,
yes.
How about us encouraging the women? Especially President Sata, his wife, and women folk that are in political position, is to encourage President Sata and all the ministers that be to start now with connecting to the copper industries,
mm-hmm.
and saying that in 4 years we would like Zambian athletes to be in a position to win at least a minimum of 5 golds. You start
wow.
now, and you start developing 4 years hence in Brazil.
Good stuff. We'll continue this discussion. Warrior, hold those thoughts that you have. I was about to go to Elizabeth, but Roger is ready with our district discussion.
Thank you, Nathan, and sorry to our listeners for coming a little bit late. We are changing a little bit of our schedule program. We are in Mansa this morning. We are speaking to Angela Mwakila. Angela Mwakila is a journalist at the Ministry of Agriculture, I think that's what she told me. Good afternoon, Angela.
Good afternoon, Roger.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm so sorry. We had arranged that you come in next week because you have a lot to share with us. But for
yes.
some reason, I couldn't hold it. I said, I'll call you today, and then if we don't cover enough ground, then we can probably continue next week.
Okay.
Yes, from our discussion yesterday, what do you do in Mansa?
Okay, Mansa, like I mentioned yesterday, I'm working with the Minister of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And Livestock, Department of National Agriculture Information Services. So basically, my job is to work with the farmers in terms of information provision to enable them to plan,
mm-hmm.
and also implement their various agricultural activities.
That is quite interesting. Now, are you based in Mansa or you are based somewhere else? I asked that question. I want to know whether you are in, is it Kawambwa or in Chelenge, or you are actually based in Mansa?
Mansa is the provincial district of Lapula province,
okay.
in Zambia.
Uh-huh.
So I'm actually based in Mansa, which
mm-hmm.
is the headquarters for the province.
Okay. And how often do you go into the rural towns of the province?
As often as need arises, because... you know, the way it is, agriculture has also become so dynamic. So most of the time, we're supposed to be in contact with our farmers.
Yes.
So it depends on the flow of funds from central government. So usually what happens is whenever we receive funds to implement our activities, we come up with a schedule according to the number of districts that we have in the province. and then we visit them. But if the fans are not allowing them, that's when we are maybe restricted only to a few districts that are nearby.
Okay, okay. And you are in the information services department. What kind of information are you getting from the farmers?
As NAIF, that is National Agriculture Information Services, what we do is to bridge the information gap in the Agriculture Extension Service. We do provide information, technical information to the farmers, and at the same time, we get feedback. You know, in short, we are trying to connect the farmers with the policymakers and at the same time with the key stakeholders in the agricultural sector.
Wapra, is not really known for farming. I could be wrong. What type of farmers are we talking about here?
We are talking about smallholder farmers and emergent farmers. You are right when you say Wapra is not known for farming, but I can tell you, Roger, things have changed now. The province is having problems with the fishing industry. I think we have fisheries. Previously, the people of Wapula province used to depend so much on fish.
Yes.
But now our lakes and rivers in the province have been depleted.
Wow.
The people of Wapula have had no choice but to direct their energy into farming this time around.
Those who are listening to us, you are on Zambia Block Talk Radio Business Forum. We are in Mansa District, provincial capital of Luapula Province. Yes, I mean, from what you just said, Angela, it was fishing in Luapula. So now they have gone into agriculture, cultivating crops. What are the major crops that they're dealing with?
I think the staple crop for the province has always been
cassava.
Even when the fisheries were still okay, but now with the support from government, farmers also in Wapula started growing, I think, maize.
Okay.
So there's there's an expansion in the maize growing. A hectareage also in the province. The support I'm talking about is the fertilizer support program, and at the same time, government is providing a ready market for the same crop, which is maize.
Yes.
Through the food reserve agency, which buys the crop when farmers produce it. So, you know, that has given farmers some kind of assurance because they're able to sell the maize when they grow it. I think the most important thing that our farmers are looking for is the having income.
Yes.
You know, they're looking at raising their income base and also household food security. So at the moment, I would say farmers are growing both cassava and maize on a little bit, large scale. And then we also have some farmers who are growing beans, groundnut. We have soya beans, which is just coming up. We have some projects that are trying to promote these other crops that I've just talked about.
One time, Angela, I traveled from Copperbelt to Wapula using is it Tuta? Is that Tuta? I don't know. That's Tuta, yeah. You know where pass through Sanfia and then come back to Mansa?
You're right, yes.
Yeah, the valley there, the Luapula Valley, I looked at that point. By then, I wasn't even very entrepreneur in my mind. But the swamp, how well-watered it is and how huge it is, why don't we use that for anything, say, for instance, rice or sugarcane, for sugar?
I think this is what our government is trying to do. You have talked about sugar, plantations, rice. They're trying to, for now, woo investors. I think there's been a lot of talk about sugar, plantation, trying to revamp. We have a plantation in Kawamba.
It yes.
used to be there, but now it's inactive, and government is thinking of finding means of revamping it. And also rice, I think there is potential in Lwapula, like most of the districts in Lwapula.
Yes, yes.
To grow rice.
Mm-hmm.
I can give an example of Kawambwa. Kawambwa, there are some blocks, like, what is it called? There is a block in Kawamba, I've just forgotten, where they're growing so much rice.
Mm.
But I think apart from growing that crop, the challenge has been marketing.
Okay.
After growing it, it's like farmers are stuck, they don't know where to sell their rice. But for the sugar plantation, I think that is also on the government's agenda.
Mm.
It's just a matter of time. As soon as they get some investors, that should be a priority for now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You are in the business of providing information, Angela. Probably you and Zambia Block Talk Radio should be very,
yeah.
very, very, very good friends. Bianchi, our good friend who is in the United States listening right now, was talking about how the United States this year is facing a food shortage because of the drought which
yeah.
they had. And then you have situation in Zambia, most farmers, small holding farmers, saying we don't have anywhere to take our food. What do you think is missing? What is the missing link between the farmers and the information to the market?
I think what I would say is so many factors affecting agribusiness or marketing of our produce. We'll talk about the road network.
Mm-hmm.
The road network in these areas, in the areas where farmers are found, I think most of our road network is not very good. So even if you were to find a good market, like, for example, on the Copper Belt, farmers are usually finding it very difficult to move their
mm-hmm.
produce to the market. And then there is, I don't know if there are policy matters, but the markets within Zambia, I think, are limited.
Yes.
Because wherever farmers would take their produce, you find that generally countrywide, farmers are producing almost the same crops. So you find that the markets are saturated. But I don't know. I think maybe in terms of information, we haven't done very well, linking farmers
yes,
to the
yes,
market
yes.
outside
well,
Zambia.
Yes.
I think there's need for us to really help farmers with information
mm-hmm.
on how they could be linked to outside markets in terms of their crops,
mm-hmm,
where
mm-hmm.
they can sell their crops. So I think the problem has been market linkages, you know.
Yes, my market. I will be, like I said, my Angela, yourselves and this platform at Zambia Block Talk Radio, we shall be linking you to a good friend of mine in Australia who is building a directory, so to say, where we
okay.
are going to show what is in Lwapula province, and the kind of crops which are being marketed,
okay.
and we can probably even
okay.
show who is looking for what. He's right now
exactly.
listening to us. So we are creating
okay.
a directory, so to say, for us to be able to link up these farmers. It is the same problem.
That would really,
uh-huh.
yes, that would really assist us because. We have some programs, like we have the Finnish government, which is implementing a program called Program for Lwapula Agriculture Bureau Development
mm-hmm.
Plan. It has also tried to put in interventions in terms of marketing produce.
Yes.
But I tell you, it hasn't been that easy. So if only we could have more players come in, I think it would be very beneficial to our farmers. Because I think lack of market has been a major challenge.
Mm.
Farmers are able to produce. They're not struggling with production anymore. I think they have enough information on how to produce the various crops. But where to take them, in terms of failing, that's where the problem is. So if only that could be done, then it would be a plus for the farmers in the province.
You may not have the figures on your fingertips, as they say. When we're talking about production levels and possibly surplus, which could be sent to other districts for marketing here, how much production are we talking about? I don't know, even know if this question makes sense. Can a farmer... yes, go ahead.
Yes. Maybe you can finish your question.
Well... What I was trying to arrive at is how much is an average farmer, for instance, is producing, or how much the entire province or some of the districts, how much are they producing? If you have any clue, or maybe you needed to look at your notes somehow.
I needed to look at my notes, like mm-hmm. I've mentioned. I wouldn't really put a figure to it,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is... I think farmers have the capacity to produce.
Yes.
Because
okay.
When we talk about the weather, I think the Wapula, we haven't yet started experiencing the challenges of global warming. I think the weather is still favorable for various agricultural activities. The only thing that is limiting the farmers, you know, as much as they would want to produce more, I mean, surplus, but they wouldn't want to continue incurring losses, because I think I'll just describe that as a loss. As much as they would want to grow so much, where do they take it at the end of the day? So capacity is there. I think there are some crops like cassava and maize where farmers are doing a lot better and they have surplus, a lot of it to sell, but they can't find a good market, because when we talk about maize, you know, the government is not going to buy all the maize.
No.
Farmers are stuck. Yeah, farmers are stuck. Where do they take the rest of it? Talking about these other crops like beans, groundnuts, soybeans, it's even worse. So I think that's what is limiting farmers. Farmers have the potential to maximize production, but they're being discouraged by the prevailing marketing situation.
Mm-hmm. Someone is listening in Japan or Australia, here in Canada where I am, in the United States. Those are some of the things members of the diaspora probably can pick up to see where we can fit in the supply chain, moving these crops from Mansa or is it Kawamba to the market. When we talk about value addition, Angela, how much value addition are we having in the province?
I think that is also one of the biggest headaches that we have as a ministry and the agricultural sector at large. Value addition is really not there. We don't have industries. There's no industry, there's no processing plant in Wapula that we can point at to say at least this is where farmers can take this crop and then process it at value. Or even at household level, I think we haven't done much in terms of training farmers on how they can add value to their crops or before they sell it. So I think value addition is also something that is missing. In the sector, in the province, we don't have that kind of thing happening yet. We've been talking about it. Whenever we talk to farmers, whenever we train farmers, we tell them about the importance of value addition. But I think it has to be supported with some plant processing equipment and so forth and so on.
Yes,
because
yes.
They wouldn't do that manually, you know. I think that's where the problem is. But otherwise, it's something that we've been telling our farmers or teaching them about.
Yes.
But the challenge is how to access the processing equipment. You know, we still have another challenge of accessing financial assistance. I mean, farmers cannot, most of them are unable to access financial assistance so that they're enabled to, I mean, buy the plants that they need or the equipment that they need to process and add value to their farm. So that's what I would say about that.
Yes, yes, yeah, I agree with that.
Is also missing.
Okay. We are speaking to Angela Mwakila. Angela Mwakila, that's your name, right? Mwakila. Mwakilima.
Angela Mwakilima. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, Angela Mwakilima. Okay. Mm. I'm on the Block Talk Radio. Dr. Patrick in North Carolina, please pick it up as always. I know your notes before your first page is full with questions.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. It is a pleasure. It is a pleasure to return to the province of Luapula. The last time we were in Luapula was back in April the 2nd, 2011, when we visited and talked with Kawamba. So having said that, let me welcome you and let me go right into the questions. When we sat down and spoke with a representative from Kawamba, we discussed agriculture, and in particular, and this Ba Elizabeth will smile at this. In particular, we talked about maize and cassava, but the main product used to be bananas, but it's no longer. And Elizabeth shared with us that the best bananas are from Kawamba. And that is an area that could be developed. So my first question to you is Mansa also looking at developing bananas? The second question is, and you mentioned this before, with respect to the sugar industry. At that time, we're talking about last year, again, there were farm block developments. So there were five big farms, the largest being about 10,000 hectare acres. And the question is, there was a need for investment, and there was a need, and you mentioned this about the need to build the infrastructure, the roads. So, again, my two questions to you is, one, is interest being promoted with development of bananas in Mwanza? And you mentioned that the roads need to be better built. So is there any work going along towards having the government or some of the companies, local companies, invest in building the infrastructure? And one more thing about Australia and developing a directory, as well as tying it into Pianki's comment with respect to having available products to meet the needs in the United States or any other country. It is essential that these products meet the standards and regulations so that when they are purchased by a country such as the United States or any other country, that it does meet the standards, because the last thing you want is to have a product that brings about an injury or sickness or condition such as death, whereas that would result in a negative turn on the country, the product, and the producer. So that's my comment on Australia. But going back to banana development, and is there any areas or individuals that would be keenly interested in building the road structure?
Okay. Angela, are you there?
I'm there. I'm listening.
Yeah, Dr. Patty gave you a two-page question, so
yeah.
You begin where you want, anywhere you want.
Okay, I think if I got him right,
yes.
He asked whether Bansa District also had the potential to have some banana plantations.
Maybe let's do this. Let's go one by one on one of the things. You cover the entire
yes.
province, Angela, information-wise. where is our banana industry to begin with? I think it was in Kawamba, but what is the state of that industry?
It used to be in Kawamba. That's if you're talking about Munushi banana skin.
Mm-hmm.
Kawamba,
yes.
Yes. Which is at the moment not there. I think we don't know what happened. It's inactive. It's not working. But like I mentioned earlier, I said there are some pronouncements by the government to revamp that scheme as well. Just like the Lwena sugar plantation, also which is in Kawamba, so we don't have these things in operation at the moment. I think they went to sleep some time back.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what I can. That's my comment on the banana scheme.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when we talk about infrastructure in the province. Infrastructure in the in any of the district, and I don't know whether to say unfortunate, but this is the function of government in Zambia. Am I correct?
You are right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like I think on the infrastructure, what I would say is that government is doing something. I think it's not just sitting.
Yes.
It's doing something to work on the feeder roads, work on the road network. So in some areas the problem is so big that I think it might take some time for government to like come up with 100% proper road network, but it is doing something about it.
Uh-huh.
I think I would give an example of the Pediko road, the
uh-huh.
road that connects Lwapula to Congo Lusaka. Right now, as we speak, there is a contractor on site trying to tar the road. I think the whole idea is, I think, to make it easier for farmers
mm-hmm.
to transport their produce to the rest of the provinces in the country.
Great.
So there's something that government is doing.
Mm-hmm. And again, what Dr. Patrick also mentioned, which with our friend who is doing a directory, we are going to be putting on that directory, is the information site in regard to standards. We want to have the best standards. Even if we are not exporting to the U.S. or anywhere, we want to have international acceptable standards. So we'll be linking you, Angela, to that site as well. But Elizabeth, it is always good, very rare on Business Forum we have to interview these council secretaries, full. We have ladies, men all the time. So it is always nice when we have a lady on the line. Over to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. I was just enjoying and listening to what Angela was saying. Angela, how are you? And how is Wapula?
How are you, Elizabeth?
Fine,
thank
you.
Okay.
The U.S. is fine. I'm just, I was listening to you and just missing the place because I visited Rapula from Kawamba to what you call it in Chelenge. I've been almost all over Rapula.
Yeah.
The time, I don't know, is that one still there? The Netherlands Development Organization, are they still in Wapula?
No, not anymore.
They moved up. Well, the time they were there, I used to come out for some workshops and training. So I covered quite a bit of regions in Wapula. And nevertheless, I'm so happy to hear what you're doing, and especially that you're a woman like you. My brother Rachari just said, in terms of agriculture, how my main concern would be really looking at the women. I mean, I've started to hear that the banana scheme is gone, but the women, to what extent are they benefiting from agriculture? I know when we talk agriculture in Africa, you cannot discuss agriculture leaving out the women and their children because they are quite critical. And I'm sure the picture has not changed. It still comes out clear that over 80%, and I'm saying 80 with a big 80% of the food that is grown in Africa, though we have commercial farmers, the food that is grown and consumed in Africa is grown by women and children.
You are right.
And yet, we still have traditional equipment being used by these women. They're using a hoyo, and they spend the whole day tilling the land. So as long as we don't improve our technology for these women, I don't know how we are going to get out of this problem of at times having shortages of food, or in other regions of Africa having famines and the like. The appropriate technologies are not there. Storage facilities are poor. Women have no voice. I mean, they talk, but they are not listened to. But meanwhile, they are feeding the whole continent of Africa. What commercial farmers are growing in Africa is mostly for export. Bear me wrong, as an agricultural
teacher, I'm
wrong. So what are we doing as governments and as people of Africa to seriously look at this serious concern, which is priority number one on my table, if we're going to fight hunger, poverty, and all the other poverty-related issues in Africa? Thank you.
Okay. I think I've gotten your concern about women and what is being done to help the women farmers also access the same is it opportunities with I think with the government, the government that we have in place right now, they're trying by all means to promote women in different sectors. Like, I'm sure you have heard that our president has appointed a lot of women in decision-making positions. I think the whole idea is to help even the less privileged, the marginalized women in rural areas, you know, do something in whatever they are doing. Because when a woman is in office, like if we have a woman, I'm not saying we have a woman agriculture minister, but if a woman minister, agriculture minister is in the office, I'm sure she would definitely be committed to seeing that the women are also facing the same incentives with the main farmers. So I think the government is committed to ensuring that the women are also helped in that area. But see, at where we at the level where we are, I think that is not being felt so much.
The trickle down effects
are not really there, especially in the farming communities. You talked about the cultural traditions where women are not allowed to speak out so much. I think I would say they're still being marginalized. They are producing quite okay, but not being heard at the grassroots level. And also you spoke about women using handholds to till the land and so forth and so on. I think that is a problem which is there, especially for women in Wapula province, because we don't even have animals in Wapula province which could be accessed by women, so that maybe they use them for animal draft for hour. So the problem is still the same. Women are depending on the handholds and, you know, spending the whole day in their farms so that they could feed the children at home and also find something to maybe take their children to school. You know, the position of women are always the ones to care about these things.
Mm-hmm.
So not much is there for the women, I would say, in the districts where we are.
Mm-hmm. And this is the appeal we keep making on Zanda Block Talk Radio. Those who are members of the diaspora, we have exposure to a lot of technology, and yet our people back home are still using a 19th century way of probably farming. Let's talk about farming, not way of doing things, but farming. We can come in and provide the very needed technology. Let me go to Texas. Nathan, please pick it up. Okay, where is Nathan?
Thank you, Roger. We are dealing with it. Well, Angela, good afternoon to you. I have two questions.
Good afternoon, thank you.
You talked about smallholder and emerging farmers. Of course, the terminologies themselves are self-explanatory. But could you please talk about a little bit more on what areas are these emerging farmers engaging in? Is it still cassava, or there are other crops that are going on to? And then my second question is, of course, Luapula is known for its fishing industry because of Lake Mweru. What improvements have taken place in the last few, let's say, 5 to 10 years in terms of processing facilities and handling of the fish? Do they still have to transport it to the Copper Belt, or it is still being processed there and marketed in different parts of the country? Thank you.
Okay. Talking about major farmers, I think we'll just talk about the two major crops for now, the maize and cassava.
Okay.
That's where we are seeing at least, farmers graduating from where they've been. They've always been, we have known them to be, to at least doing something, reasonable, I would call it. Then you talked about the fish, the depleted Lake Mweru, and I would say it's you've talked about the ten years period that has passed. I think a lot has happened to our fisheries in the province because of the bad fishing methods. We don't have fish anymore. There's no fish being exported or being taken out of the province, even to the Copper Belt, Lusaka, the way it used to be. We are almost, I think, at zero. The situation is so scary, I think, if you look at it, because even the markets in Luapula province don't have so much fish, maybe, the way it used to be some time back.
What happened?
So, It's finished. Like I've talked about, maybe over dependence. Like previously, the people of Luapula province never used to farm. I mean, to grow these other crops that they are growing now. They just used to depend on fishing. It was the mainstay of the economy. So there was over dependence, and I think what has worsened the situation is the illegal fishing methods, where people are using like mosquito net to catch fish, and they end up even destroying the juvenile fish, because when you use the mosquito net, it will not spare the small fish to really sweep everything. So that's what has been happening. And also we have a situation like on Lake Mweru, where we have settlers, I mean, the fishery areas. You know, these are people who have just gone to stay. They've settled there, meaning whatever they would do is related to fishing. So it has put a lot of pressure, I think, on the natural water bodies. And as we speak right now, the depletion levels are so alarming. We have very little fish remaining. Though government is committed, they are talking about restocking, but we don't know when that is going to happen. But to be frank, the situation on the ground is that the fisheries are almost becoming empty now.
You know, I had a question.
Oh, go ahead, Brother Pianki. We actually running out of time, but go ahead, Brother Pianki.
Yes, you mentioned about the inavailability of fish today. So is she saying that this is a very a high potential market for, say, an organic fish farm, indoor fish farm? If that was in production there in Zambia, would the people who take on such a enterprise, would they be afforded an opportunity to increase their wealth?
I don't think I've understood your question, Brother Pianchi. Rephrase your question.
Well, I was asking, is there opportunity for someone to come and start and build an organic fish farm where you could raise fish indoors and they would be sold live, since that you say there's depletion in fish?
When do you want to go to Zambia, Brother Pianchi? We can arrange for a visa for you tomorrow.
I'll be able to go after October.
Yeah, we can arrange for you. Anything can be if you wanted to. My sister, talk to that. Brother Pianchi is asking whether someone wanted to come and set up some organic fish, you called it?
Yeah, organic fish farm where they produce under control
conditions. Under controlled environment, yes.
Okay, I don't think that would be a bad idea. I think that would be welcomed by various stakeholders. Because, we have the Department of Fisheries within Ministry of Agriculture, and what they are doing right now is to promote fish farming, aquaculture. Though it's still at a very small scale. So if we had such interventions like what you've just talked about, I think it would be a step in the right direction, because the situation, especially when it comes to the fishing industry in Nampula province, the picture is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned earlier, we don't have animals, you know, most of we don't have farmers, cattle farmers in Nampula. There's very few, and, you know, they're just doing it the household level.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning even the source of protein for the province is very limited. So if only we could have such interventions, then it would help the people of this province.
Okay. So our cultural way of living has really caught up with us. Thank you so much, my sister. And coming up will be Spotlight. After Spotlight, Anakazi will be coming on. On Sundays, we have started a new show, 9 p.m. Eastern, Rebuilding Zambia, like Nehemiah did. We've had a lot of support from the listeners. Please tune in. And then on Tuesday, we have Solution, beginning at 11 p.m. Angela, it was so good talking to you after just a short notice. We were supposed to connect somewhere, but thank God. I will be probably calling you during the week so we can connect Brother Pianchi to you when he comes to Zambia. But I'll be connecting you so we can build up some kind of communication link on the way forward.
Okay, no problem. Be the pleasure. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, and have a good weekend, my sister.
Thank you. Same with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, thank you. That was a little discussion. Dr. Patrick, we managed to call our system, agreed to come on air and share with us what is happening in Mansa and Wapula. She's going to be our link to connect us to a lot of districts, the remaining districts, like you said, Dr. Patrick, which we haven't covered since last year. Nathan, are you not? Dr. Patrick is able to tell you the date when we talked to Kawamba. I have no clue.
I'm telling you. Like you said, he's got a notepad in front of him. Must be 200 pages now.
I don't know if it's a notepad. It's some kind of software. Because for him to tell even
the
date.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
My goodness.
Oh, before we appear villagers to Bwaria here, we forget their iPads.
Yes, you know, it just goes.
iPad.
Yeah. So, Dr. Patrick,
it also helps us follow up on a lot of things. For example, do you remember when we discussed Kawambwa, mm-hmm. and there were two things that we needed to follow up on, and being that Angela covers the entire province, we wanted to know whether or not the money had been set aside by mm-hmm. the government to build roads, and we wanted to know, and that was back in 2011, and we wanted
right.
to know if that was a continued. That had to do with the farm blocks development, and
yeah.
then there was
yeah.
another issue that we had with respect to the banking situation.
Yes.
Remember, there was in Kwamba, there was only one owned bank by Zambia.
That's right.
And
that's right.
In that area, so we have a lot of history
yeah.
coming out of a Zambia
yes.
Blog Talk Radio,
yes.
in which we can
yes.
piggyback and ask what's the status.
Right,
of it.
Right, right. Actually, Dr. Patrick, that reminds me. This is one thing I think we really need to do. You have also remind us the count of how many districts we have talked to. I think there is need for us maybe even to go back to some of the towns we've talked to and revisit some of the points we talked about and
oh, yeah.
see what is happening to those questions which were raised
yeah.
During
yeah.
the program.
That'd
yeah,
be Jonah, great.
Sorry, I didn't know whether you wanted to say anything on Kawamba because no one was indicating here. So I left people alone. I don't know if you had any comment on what you were, what you heard from what's her name again?
Angela.
Angela.
Yes, I was really just enjoying the discussion. Wapura is a place that has a special place in my heart. So I was just enjoying the discussion and just soaking in the information.
Okay. No. Thank you to that. But it's a sad situation, Nathan, when it comes to fish.
Mm.
I know here in the United States, in Canada, most industrialized world, just for you to go and fish, to go and buy something from Walmart, to go fishing, you need to have a license. But who is going even to listen to you to talk about a license in Zambia? They think you are joking. But now
they'll be wondering which planet you come from.
Yes. Now we are reaping what probably we have sowed for so many years. And if no other interventions, as she was saying, is put in place, everything will be wiped out by Elizabeth.
That's true.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So we transition here, and we'll be going to Spotlight. I like this song. Short song, and then when we come back, Nathan will pick it up.
Put in the car.
discussion right there with Business Forum, and we are really encouraged. And very, very, very smart lady out there, Bualia, don't you think so?
Yes, she is.
Very smart lady. I'm listening to her and I'm saying to myself, "Ooh, Elizabeth, smart lady, smart lady."
That's true.
Yes, we are going to transition here and talk about something. I think it's very, today I didn't want to have a guest. I just wanted to, you know, bring out things that are on my heart, on my mind, so that we can just sort of share ideas here. I know the brains that are available here right now, Wariaba, Elizabeth, Dr. Patrick, Jonah, we can do very good justice with this topic, and it's one that will be there. Creation of districts, an avenue for job creation and infrastructure in Zambia. I think that should give us a lot of things to talk about. But let me just remind everybody that after this, Anakazi will be coming up on top of the hour, which I believe will be noon at Eastern Time. And you can all join. And like Roger mentioned as well, on Sunday there is Rebuilding Zambia with Nehemiah Prayers. And then Tuesday night, Pastor Mwaka with Solutions at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A great discussion there with Angela in Luapula Province. I'm very disappointed to know that they've completely depleted the fish resources in Lake Mweru. That is very disappointing. Should we start a system of, what do you think is the problem, Walia, right there, before we go to the creation of districts?
Well, part of the problem is you have a population of people who don't understand fish resources. It's
mm-hmm.
not managed. So people overfish because we have it in our minds that it's an endless resource that's always going to be there. You know, and as much as you may say we don't want government to be involved in everything, I think this is where you need some intervention, either from government or from a nonprofit that will manage fish resources to say, you know what, you can't come in here and fish 500 people, you know, getting limited amounts of fish. You can't do it. It's not tenable.
Jonah, when you have people fishing using mosquito nets and there are, I'm sure, stipulated regulations or policy on the size of the nets that you can use. Now, if I jump into the water and I'm using a mosquito net, there's something with regulation and enforcement right there.
Yes, exactly. And if you look at the U.S., you can't just wake up any day and go fish. I mean, certain places, they have fishing season. And during that fishing season, you have kinds in which you can fish, you know. And what we need to do, and it might be pretty hard to do, but probably what we need to do is limit the amount of commercial fishing on the waterways,
uh-huh.
and encourage more of commercial fishing in terms of fish farms, and you know, more of a controlled environment where you can easily tell that you're depleting your resources. You know, and the as far as commercial fishing on the actual public waterways, it has to be restricted to fishing season. That way, when you bring in your haul, the government can actually check how much, you know, there can be a tonnage limit of how much you can bring in, things like that. You can't just leave people to just do whatever they want because, you know, as she said, you know, people for so long neglected agriculture. So it's just fishing. If all your nutrition comes from fishing, and from that same, you know, you want to eat, you want to make a living, you know, from the fish, from your resource, I mean, of course, you're going to deplete it, and especially if you're using mosquito net.
Jonah, before I forget, you need to give me information about, you talked about a Zambian basketball player somewhere?
Yeah, there's actually two. There's one called Given Kalipinde.
He two plays of them?
Yeah, there's two of them. And both by the same man, Mr. Tim Durgan. He used to work for Zambia. He was an American expatriate, and I think he was working for the Daily Board or something. I can't remember where he was working, but he was only in Zambia for about 5 years. But in that time, he was able to you know, because he loves basketball, so he's able to recognize two.
Okay. The reason I'm asking you for that information, and I'm glad you mentioned that there are two of them. This is what I want us to do, Bwalya, by Elizabeth, Dr. Patrick. We are going to mobilize all these Zambian professionals, so to speak, athletes who are in the diaspora. Of course, we have Prince and Gerard who participated in the Olympics. And we have, what's his name, the one in New Mexico, the professional golfer. I forget his name, Patrick.
Dalitso.
We are going to get these two basketball players, Prince, Gerard, Dalitso, and anybody out there, Bwaliaba, by Elizabeth, if you know any professional Zambian athlete or player, ball game player, we're going to do a show with these guys, okay? And get their minds on how we can help develop sports or athletic infrastructure back home. We're going to talk to them as people who are in the business, who are doing it and everything else. I mean, we didn't even get to the information that Gerard gave me, what it takes to be an athlete, Bwalya, and participate and compete at that level of the Olympics. He gave me such a long write-up, and I was saying to myself, oh my goodness me, it takes a lot of sponsorship to sponsor one athlete. And when you look at the American, the United States of America sending such a large team and delegation of athletes to the Olympics, it tells you that some people, a number of people, wrote some very big checks, Dr. Patrick. It's a very, very serious business, and we need to address it quickly. Okay, I want us to get into creation of districts, an avenue for job creation and infrastructure. By no means, please don't label me as a PF person. Please, don't even go there. Don't even go there. I think you can tell by the way I talk that I'm a non-partisan person. By the way, Bwalya, I'm considering becoming a Tea Party activist here in the United States.
You are?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. I think I like the Tea Party spirit. They are very aggressive. Not that I agree with everything they do. I just like their zeal and everything else. Now, anybody can answer this question. Do we know the number of districts that have been created, Bwalya? I was trying to figure out, Jonah. Is it 18?
I certainly don't.
I've been on the internet the whole time trying to figure out, but I there's no information.
All I remember, Bwalya, I stopped counting at 8. Okay.
And when was that?
Unless I had a pad like Dr. Patrick does, who write notes and he tells you what needs to be discussed and followed up with Kawambo and everything. I can't remember. The last count I did was 8. This is the reason I want us to talk about this by Elizabeth. We are looking at the issue of unemployment challenge in Zambia. And I am convinced that the creation of the district can be that avenue that we can use.
Hello, good morning.
For that, okay? We can use the creation of the districts as an avenue to do that. Okay, let's, for argument's sake, Bwalya, I'll start with you. Let's say there are 15 districts that have been created, okay? Just for argument's sake. Let's tabulate from your resourcefulness of that mind of yours. I know how resourceful your mind is. What is the basic infrastructure that needs to be in a district? Why?
Well, so before we even backtrack,
uh-huh.
I don't even understand why we're creating new districts. I mean, I've yet to see any sort of documentation from the government that explains why they're doing this and what the short and long-term goals are. So, I mean, I can say what is required, but without knowing what their overall plan is, it's kind of hard to go from there, don't you think?
Yes, I agree. This is the way. Let's help them.
Let's help them. Well, first of all, let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
The districts that we had prior to PF coming in, so we had, what, 72?
Is it 72 or 73, Jonah? Is that it?
Something along those lines. So my first question was,
Were those not enough? Were some of them covering too large an area? And actually, maybe even more basic, what's the role of a district?
Okay, good question. Very good, intelligent question right there. What's the role of a district? Jonah?
This was Edith Nawaki's design, which I sort of supported. Because, if you remember, Chiluba 91 ran on a platform of decentralization.
Okay.
And Edith Nawaki was finance minister at some point, and she was tasked with this. And the idea was to treat the district as a government unit, the way we treat the states here.
All right.
A district was going to have, every line ministry was going to have an office in the district, and all development planning was going to be done at district level. So the district will tell the central government what they need through their line ministry. And all the funds in the budget are given at the district level for development. Not at provincial level, not at constituency level, but at district level.
Okay.
And then the district commissioner was going to be in charge of that development. So that was the whole idea for the Chiluba's decentralization. So PF is going by that, by saying, okay, if we're going to do that, what was happening is that, funds I think are allocated. I don't think that I have to see the figures, but I don't think they're allocated proportionally. So some districts you find they cover much, much larger areas, but getting the same funds for other districts that are much, much smaller or have smaller populations.
Okay.
So what the PF government is trying to do is now make it a little bit more even. So that when we give 20 million to this district and 20 million to that district, the 20 million covers, it's proportional. It covers about the same ground, as opposed to 20 million here only being 10% of what that district actually needs.
There's one challenge that I see in our scenario, Zambia in particular, or probably any African country for that matter, because one of the things you've pointed out, Jonah, is every line ministry. The reason I'm focusing on that for this moment is that, like we have seen not only in the PF government, in the MMD government transitioning from UNIP government, ministries switch and they change. Okay? So doesn't that pose a challenge?
Yeah, but no,
because
there's
no consistency to say we have 23 or 30 ministries. You see the point I'm making, Walia?
Well, that's why I even asked the question. So, I mean, I thank Jonah for breaking down the history with what was the goal under FTJ. I remember that. And so this is why I've always asked, what exactly is the role of a district commissioner today? Because if we're talking about decentralizing and that's why they're adding more districts, blah, 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 but I don't see anything tangible happening with a district commissioner. So who is that person in relation to the provincial minister? Because I still see the provincial ministers having more clout than a district commissioner. But if you're talking about putting the power back into the individual districts, they can be autonomous, making the decisions. Those are the people that should be empowered. And if they're going to empower them, should they not be elected as opposed to be appointed?
The biggest problem we have in Zambia, and I'll just be very, very frank with this, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but the biggest problem we have is we have people that have never lived, never worked in a decentralized system trying to define a decentralized system. It was the case in the Chiluba era. It was the case towards the end of the Kaunda era. So if you've never lived or worked in a decentralized system, you're going to define it as you imagine it.
Mm.
And sometimes it's not necessarily a decentralized system. You end up with a system that still retains a lot of aspects of a centralized system, but you're trying to apply it in a decentralized way, which just brings about confusion. Because right now the confusion that would arise is the fact that we still have councils and we still have provinces. And we have a provincial minister, we have mayors for the cities, we have town clerks.
Yep.
So there's all this confusion. What's whose person's role? So you're still retaining a centralized system, building a decentralized system within it. So what we needed to do is have someone that actually has experience or have a study. You know, it has to be something that we have to plan. We have to realize that we're not going to build a decentralized system in 5 or 10 years. It's going to take us about 20 or 30 years before we become truly decentralized, meaning that there's going to be generations that will never see that. But we have to start planning now. Yeah, we have to start planning now and slowly recognizing what aspects can be decentralized. Because right now, no one is even thinking about, you know, if everything changes, how is the law going to change? Because the law has to accommodate it.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey,
might I also add, in response to what Bualya said,
mm-hmm.
When you create a district, you must answer three critical questions. One is, what's the political reason for the creation of the district? What's the economical decision for the creation of a district? And who is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit the people in the newly created district, the province, or is it going to benefit the political party who created the district? So when we answer those three questions, we'll have a better picture as to district creation. Remember with the creation of Muxinga, we can go back as March the 31st, and this is why Zambia Blog Talk Radio is so important, is on March the 31st of this year, we talked about Chikankata.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, at that time, President Sata created one more district, or more districts in Zambia, in addition to the 74. So when March 31st, 2012, there were 74 districts. And then from that point on, among the newly created districts, you had, it included Chilanga in the Lusaka province, Molobezi in the western province, Chikankata and Shirundu in the southern province, Bubi in the eastern province, and Nsama in the northern province. And then you increased a province, a 10th province, which I mentioned before is Muxinga. Now, with all of that, you go back to the question as to why politically, why economically, and who benefits from these districts. Chikankata was because it was once part of the Mazubuka district,
mm-hmm.
and it was so far from each other, it made sense to create a district. But I'm not sure of why the other districts were created. Was it because of distance or political, economic, or who benefits what? So those are the three major questions we need to ask in the creation of the district, and we can get answers from the creators. We have a lot of friends and connections that could give us those answers, but that would lead us
to answer those questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So since this is a brainstorming session, I would like let's tackle the two latter aspects of the two questions: economic reasons and who is it going to benefit. That's what I want us to focus on.
Right.
If you really ask me personally what I think the political reasons were, the answer is very obvious. What I can tell everybody is that politically I'm very predictable. You don't need to think too much where I stand on the political scenario or what. So, Bualya, this is what I want us to do, okay? I know all of us on this forum know, I know where you stand based on what you are saying and how you are sounding. I can tell. It's very easy. Just like everybody out there, Jonah, they tell me, by listening to me, they know where I stand politically. It's very easy to tell, okay? I just made an announcement here, Dr. Patrick. I don't know that you heard me, that I'm thinking of joining the Tea Party activism. That's what I call it. Not because, you see, I just want to know what drives them, what makes them think and do things the way they do. Yeah,
President Obama, that's what drives them.
Ah, I like that.
In a nutshell, they're still reeling from the civil rights movement.
that finally saw black people in this country become full citizens, and they're further reeling from a black man being in the White House. That's what the Tea Party is about.
Ooh, I like that. Now, before we lose our direction on the the district, Jonah here. I like that information. You see, it's good to with all things being held constant. Okay, let's forget about the PF and everything. Somebody with a genuine motive and intention has created a district. What are the economic reasons and benefits? I know. Do your best to answer the question.
No, somebody creates a new district
without
addressing the issues that we currently have with town councillors, mayors, provincial ministers. That to me tells me they don't fully understand what the issues are that face the people and what services people require from which offices. That's what I get.
Okay. So if, for example, let's say I'm looking at, let me try to see. How do I address this? Of course, not that it's a bad example, but literally everything in Zambia, to some extent, is in Lusaka. Let's take all those services that we get from Lusaka and take them to the district. I'm talking about a passport, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about health services. You don't need to refer anybody to the main hospital in Lusaka, Dr. Patrick, okay? Let's talk about the passports. Let's talk about health services. What else? Help me out here, Jonah. Some things that we can take away from Lusaka, like Elizabeth. Without referring people to UTH, what else are we referred to Lusaka? Title deed.
Everything.
Land.
Everything you refer to Lusaka. Land.
Land transactions. I think the only thing you can get in your district really without going to Lusaka is the NRC.
NRC. Okay. So, you see, remember my what I'm trying to get us to do here by Elizabeth is creation of districts.
Passport is Lusaka.
Yes, it's Lusaka, Ndola, and Livingstone, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything in North. Do they have something in Kasama, Jonah? No, I'm looking. I think the passport office created regional offices. Okay, this is the way this is the way my mind is working, Dr. Patrick. I'm saying to myself, okay, now work with me, everybody here. I know your political convictions and views about PF. Do your best to put that aside. Can you tell that I've really put that aside and I've said, look, if okay, all things being constant, take all those services that we get from Lusaka and you are able to get them from, listen to how ably Dr. Patrick has listed the districts. Huh? Let's go to Vubui by Elizabeth. You can get your passport from Vubui. You don't need to be referred to UTH. You can get your title deed from Vubui. Let's talk about how the benefit, the three questions Dr. Patrick has mentioned, the benefits and the economic, benefits to that district.
Elizabeth, before you start, let me just interject being the devil's advocate. I have all of the passports and all of the authority in Lusaka.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I give some of this power to Ruby? Why should I give it to you, Elizabeth? Because I have 90% power in my pocket. Why should I give 10% to Ruby?
Yeah. I think the general argument.
No, okay, Jonah, go ahead.
The general argument and probably the problem that Kaunda had, because to be honest, Kaunda tried to decentralize as well. I mean, we have to realize, if you look at it from a historical point of view, Kaunda inherited a very centralized system, an extremely centralized system, the British system. And a long time he was trying to decentralize it by having district governors and all that. So he tried. But the biggest problem he ran into was the skill set of some of the people in some of these remote areas. So you have a situation where they just couldn't trust, you know, some people in these areas with such power. Because you give a person in Minilunga the you know, you give them the ability to give out passports, to give out NRCs, before where they have that ability to give out NSCs, but passports, driver's licenses, they felt like those would always, those would fall into the hands of Congolese, Rwandese, Tanzanians, you know, because it would be easier, you know, in terms of corruption, it's easier to influence those people with, you know, $10 than it is to influence someone in Lusaka with $10. So there was a trust issue over time. So because of that trust issue, the capacity was never grown. You know, the capacity to deliver was never grown. And that's what's happening even now. You find the best talent goes to Lusaka. The best talent, if a person is extremely talented in Kawamba, they don't stay in Kawamba. Eventually, they move to the Copper Belt or they move to Lusaka. You know, so there's been a gap that has been created over time, which we need to address first. We have to be able to address that.
Before you jump in, we just want to let everybody, our listeners, know that you're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. We're having a roundtable discussion here, courtesy of Paradigm Calling Card. You can find out the information about the services and products they are able to offer on their website, mytalkphone.com. The subject of discussion is creation of districts, an avenue for job creation and infrastructure development. You can contribute by going to Twitter, Zambia Block Radio, or on our Facebook page, Zambia Block Talk Radio. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Thank you. I want to concur with what Jonah has just said, but I also want to refer back to the question Dr. Patrick raised, the 10%. Why should I give 10% power away from Lusaka or to a district or whatever? But also refer back, that's why I concur with Jonah, to historically where we're coming from. Remember, we used to have mayors. If you remember those days when we had what we called district councils. And my own father was the treasurer of Kitwe District Council for years until almost the time he was retired. Then he moved him as administrator because he was getting old. I'm just a young man there. But as treasurers, I remember enjoying the benefits of being a council child who saw what councils had those days. Road networks, caterpillars, every department of the council was well equipped with money. My father, I never knew what it meant. I would sleep at school and my brother would be waiting for me to pick me. We had cars all over. And I'm telling you, we had money because my father was the treasurer of the council anyway. Residential areas were clean. We never knew in Kitwe what malaria meant. In Kitwe Central Hospital, if they are going to get any person, they were diagnosing it like here. If they caught you with malaria, the first question the doctors will ask is, did you go to a rural area? Because you could never find a mosquito or Kitwe in the cities of those days. And the cities had money. They had the road, the grass, everything trimmed. We had Kitwe. If you remember, those were in Kitwe. We had Kitwe playing fields. I mean, Kitwe playing grounds.
Yeah.
Between parklands and when you're coming to the city of to the main town, there was that big park where we used to go as children on Saturday. There was a lodge train. I broke my arm. I still remember. I saw through one of the swings there. And my father had to rush to the hospital because he was called, your daughter is in the hospital. She broke her hand. I was following my sisters and brothers, swinging on the swing, and they jumped, and I wanted to jump. I was a kid by then. But what I'm saying, this is where we are coming from. We had a structure that worked for Zambia, which we could have continued with. But politics came to play. I remember when mayors were running, this was the situation. The moment governors came to be, governors started fighting mayors, because their structures that were set up by government, by Kaunda, those were politicians, and they wanted the resources, they wanted the control. And it was at that time when the confusion started coming in. Lusaka started taking hold of everything and control of everything. Then eventually when the councils went broke, the issue came in. No, councils should sell their houses because now they can't, because they manage their houses. Mm-hmm. They collected the rentals and everything. So we are coming from a situation where we've experimented a lot of things that worked and didn't work, and we've made serious mistakes as Africans, which needs to be revisited, and we need to question ourselves and say, where did we go wrong? What can we correct now? Secondly,
when you talk about, very quickly, when you talk about the 10%, my question then would be, yes, they're now coming up with districts. Are they also talking about sorting out the political situation in Zambia, or is it an issue of political power? For as long as the politicians want to hold on to power, let's forget about decentralization.
That goes
right back to my point.
Yeah.
The capacity and the abilities, as Elizabeth just laid out, are there. But the question goes back to, I took all of that power. It's in my pocket. What's going to encourage me to give the power back? That's the issue. It's now been centralized. What is going to make me want to give part of it or some of that power back to the district?
Yeah. Okay. As when we reach at this stage, I'll admit to everybody, Waria, okay, I concede. I was trying to... I concede. I wanted us to deal with this thing from a hypothetical point
of
view.
We knew we'd bring you out.
I know. I'm trying to be nice. Everybody tells me I'm too rough with the politicians and everything. Okay, Waria, I concede. So, like you said, I need to go back to the first of the three questions Dr. Patrick raised. It therefore appears, Waria, and anybody else can chip in here, we cannot address the issue of creation of districts without addressing what are the political reasons, Ms. Waria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. What are the political reasons, the economic reasons, and like I mentioned before, and Elizabeth expanded upon, what then is the role of the council? I mean, her history obviously is much longer than mine. You saw the benefits of having a council much longer than I did, but those are the real things we have to ask. How then, in this new structure, is it going to work? Are you still going to have the provincial minister? Are you still going to have a town mayor, councillors? Are you going to have a district commissioner? And if you have all those people, what are their roles and how do they interact? Or are those too many layers? Is it redundant in many ways? Those are things we need to be asking before we just say, oh, we're creating districts for job creation. Well, no. Let's go back to the entire structure. What is the overall goal? What do we want to see when we step back and we look at all of Zambia and say, this is how the system is going to work? And that's why we need to have these kind of frameworks discussed as Zambians. This should not just be happening at State House or wherever these discussions are happening. As Zambians, we should be involved. Our voice should be heard. If we're going to be electing these people, we elect them. I personally don't think there should be political appointees. And this should be in the law so people can say, okay, I'm new to Kitwe. How does the structure work? And you can go. You can go to the Kitwe City Council or whatever. You have a booklet and it explains to you how the hierarchy works, who provides what services, who the district commissioner is, who the mayor is, who the clerk is, who the treasurer is. All of that should be defined. And without defining it, that's where we run into problems. In 2016, if PF is removed, the mother of multi-party democracy comes in and says, that stuff is old. We're going to do things our way.
And you see, Waria, what you have said before you come in, Jonah, you see, I'm saying, talking about the services like Elizabeth, Dr. Patrick has outlined, most of us on this forum are based in the United States. You've seen on the news about the mosquito infestation in Dallas and the aerial spraying going on, okay? I'm sure you've all seen that on the news. I remember growing up, Dr. Patrick, I grew up in a mining area. The issue of spraying or disease control and ensuring that the well-being and welfare of the citizens of the particular city was the responsibility of the city council, like Elizabeth has explained.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I lived in a mining area by Elizabeth, the council employees came and spread at our yard. Okay? Simple services like that, and what has happened to them? Simple services like that, so to speak.
Well,
Jonah, you can jump in what you wanted to say.
Well, I want to concur with Elizabeth. You know, I think over time we've eroded the position of the city council, severely eroded them. And the biggest mistake I think Kaunda made was to think that one model in one province will work in every other province. And that's the reason why he brought in these district governors. You know, the structure is going to be the same for every district. But the whole point of decentralization is you let people determine themselves. You know, so if you create a district or you go to the province, you have to let them determine how they're going to govern themselves. You can give them the general framework, which has to be backed not only by policy, but backed by the law and the constitution, so that no politician later on can come and interfere with that. And that's what we don't have. So if the PF is removed in 2016, who knows who will come in? That person might come and just change everything without even figuring out what worked under PF or what didn't work under PF. That's what PF did when they just came into power. They just started changing everything, changing as much as they could that the MMD did. That's what MMD did in 1991, just changing everything Kaunda did without even, you know, indiscriminately, without even seeing what worked and what didn't work under Kaunda and what didn't, and trying to find out why what didn't work, you know. So what we need to do is, you know, like the way they do it in the U.S., you make policy, but it has to be backed by legal framework, and it has to fit in the Constitution, you know. If these
that's
don't
very,
qualify...
That's very important.
Yeah.
That's very important, John.
Dr. Patrick, as you come in with whatever point you come in also, I want you to have this at the back of your mind when after you say what you want to say. Therefore, it goes without saying that whatever political reasons you are creating a district for play a very huge underlining factor in the way things are going to move.
I couldn't agree more than I agree 110%+ with what Jonah just said. You must have a legal legislative framework in place to address any changes or proposed changes. If there wasn't a legal process in place in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
when the impact on voting has gone astray, if there wasn't any legal recourse, the voting capacity of minority in Pennsylvania would be mute. It would be mute in Ohio, but there is a legal address as well as a civil outcry in which you can address these changes or these impactful legislation. So the same thing is true in Zambia with respect to the law and with respect to the legal framework on what you can do. And as Walia mentioned, you have to have something, a legal book in hand, so that you know exactly what you can do and what you can't do with respect to entering a district. I mean, everything that's been said on this conversation is extremely important and needs to be meshed together in order to go forward. Not one part of what was said by anyone and everyone on this call should be left out. It should be packaged together and moved forward with respect to one mind, one purpose, and that is in the creation of a district. Our voices must continue to be heard in the development and the implementation of a district.
Walia, in your reviews and work on the Constitution, not only on this show, but of course I know you did a lot of work behind the scenes, anything that comes up in terms of district management constitutionally?
You know, not that I can think of off the top of my head. You know, I won't even lie. I'd have to go back and review that part.
I have one. So, in our new constitution, we will have provincial parliaments that will be voted in. But the provincial leader, the provincial governor, the provincial minister is still going to be appointed. So you're going to have a voted-in body that will be headed by an appointed person. Isn't that a contradiction in itself? Who who the president will have the power to hire and fire. You know, someone that can veto some of the bills that this elected body comes up with. Then in the end, what we're ending up with is we're still ending up with power in Lusaka. Because the president can tell the minister what to veto and what not to veto, or he loses his job.
Jonah,
so we end up with the same problem, like the problem we had with governors. It's the same exact problem. Kaunda had power over the governors, and the governors, in the end, had power over the elected officials at the council level. And in the end,
they voted
the council.
Jonah, we don't even have to go that far. We can stay in the United States. Do you remember what they did in Michigan, or tried to do in Michigan? Well, they did in Michigan, where you had elected officials, but they being the state government, recalled an old act in which you can appoint an executive manager.
Oh yes.
And that executive manager can make all the decisions, regardless if you have a mayor or city council. So
there are
structures here that's similar to it, but we should and we must address appointments, as you say, because that just refutes all legal understanding and parameters. When you have somebody that can appoint, as you said so aptly said, that person can do anything they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you see, this is the thing. After Dr. Patrick has said that you brought me out, I was trying to be very nice in discussing this thing. But you all brought me out, warrior. You guys can't just let me be nice for one day, and you just have to bring me out. First of all, Jonah, provincial parliaments are wishful thinking, okay? Now I'm talking as Nathan. That's wishful thinking. It won't work. They can put it in the constitution all they want. It's not going anywhere. But Elizabeth already said we had a structure that worked. Our problem is that we think when we come into power, if I take over from Bwalya, I completely do away with everything Bwalya was doing. Bwalya takes over, Jonah takes over from Bwalya, he does away with everything, even if some of the things were good. You don't do that. That's why structures are important and they need to be respected. Therefore, the constitution needs to be above any human being. That, to me, that is the only way that this will work. This is a very important question that we need to, and then all I have seen here in talking about this, Jonah, Dr. Patrick, Elizabeth, Bwalya, and Yareka, it still brings us back to the three major questions Dr. Patrick asked. What's the political reason? What's the economic reason? Who is it going to benefit? And if you look at and examine these three questions, of course, you realize that the overriding and the critical issue here, what's the political reason? Okay.
Can I come in again, Bankama?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to come in?
Yeah. And you see, the thing is that one of the things is that Lusaka is not willing to give up not even 0.1% of the power it has right now. That's my position, right, Elizabeth? You can come in.
Thank you so much. And I totally agree with you. What I wanted to say was just building on the governors. When governors came into power at that time, if you remember, when councils were so rich, the central government was actually didn't have the much money that councils had, especially the bigger councils in the bigger cities, because they were collecting all the revenue. So what they did was when they placed the governors there, the governors started playing the role of pulling resources from the councils and, you know, giving them to their political party. So they started reinforcing the UNIP party, so that to keep it in position until they had depleted all the resources in the districts and in the councils. Eventually, the councils were, you know, crippled and started laying off workers and everything started falling apart. They couldn't buy new equipment. They couldn't grade roads. All those feeder roads were graded by councils. They had the equipment.
Yeah.
They had graders. So when all that happened, vehicles packed, all these departments went to zero. The heads of departments laid off, and sometimes only walking, not even with the car. What happened now is, like if you have seen the last election, is a good example, where so much came out that the MMD used the government machinery to campaign.
they will never give off power because they know all the taxes, all the money that the governments, that they collect in taxes, they use some of that money as political parties to run and when they're in office to campaign. So as long as there's nothing in the Constitution stopping them from doing that, that the party should be independent, should fundraise and manage on it, whether they're rolling or not, this problem will be there. The power that is there is all attached to the money that they will get from this district or from the system as it is right now.
And you see, what you have said, Vice Elizabeth, during, in our scenario, during the campaign season, that's why you never hear that the president was in this area fundraising, the minister was in that area fundraising, because the party in power has got its machinery at its disposal, and all they simply do is use government resources. In this country, well, I'm sure it's not also perfect or 101% good, but you do hear the Republicans raise so much, Mitt Romney, Obama, and everything else, because they separate the party functions from the, government. This has been Zambia Block Talk Radio. We started with, in our early discussions, we talked about Olympics, athletic competitions, or superpower battlegrounds. Great discussion there. We shall continue. John and I are going to put together a group of Zambian athletes in the diaspora to try and discuss how we can help the infrastructure back home. And Roger was in Mansa District talking to some information lady there with agriculture. And next week, I believe, we'll continue. And this on Spotlight, we're talking about creation of districts and ANSA, an avenue for job creation or infrastructure development. I tried to be a very nice guy, but they wouldn't let me. They brought me out. So this is what we're going to do. 4 minutes remaining. Your final comments. I'll start with Elizabeth.
No, just that it's been a very great discussion. I mean, it's a pity our sister missed the first part, but great job. Keep it up, and I hope we can continue on this subject we've just been discussing today, and I hope sometime we can also be coming up with some, you know, resolutions or whatever it means that we can create and write up and send back to the government of Uganda and say, this is what we are saying, this is what we want done. Because we can't just be discussing. These
the
are very important points we are raising.
The
yes.
way forward, yeah. Joanna, your final comments?
I concur with Elizabeth, and I think we need to find a way to use Dr. Patrick's notes and document what we're doing and to make sure that, you know, we build a catalog of what we're doing. Because I think we can't just discuss and let things evaporate. I mean, if it wasn't for Dr. Patrick, I wouldn't have known what we did on March 21st.
Yeah.
So,
excellent.
We need to document it.
Wadia, your final comment.
For me, I want to go back to the cities that we once had, where the council would come once a week and take away garbage, where the streets were clean, where the potholes were fixed before they even became big. That's what we need to go back to. That's what I long for. That's the Zambia I remember growing up in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dr. Patrick, finally, in conclusion and in closing.
I agree with everyone and what you've presented in your closing remarks. And I would like to emphasize that we follow up on what you mentioned a few minutes ago earlier, that we should follow up. Because when we follow up, that in turn will remind the individuals we talked to that we had not forgotten our discussion and that we are going to bring forth some information. And most important, what Elizabeth stated, that we collate all of this information and we get it to the right people in Zambia to let them know that we are discussing these issues, we are interested in these issues, and it means so much to us that that we would like them, we would entreat them that they address these issues going forward.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, and please stand by for Anakazi. We'll catch you tomorrow on Nehemiah's Prayers and on Tuesday as well for Solutions with Pastor Mwaka. Anakazi is coming up.